Matthew Shipp is a jazz pianist. He's one of a number of artists pioneering a style that hasn't yet settled on a name. It goes by Jazztronica, New Jazz, also Blue Screen Jazz. Shipp collaborates with electronica and hip-hop musicians and groups like the Anti-Pop Consortium, who create a sonic backdrop for his improvisations. Critics have singled out Shipp's new CD, Equilibrium, as a benchmark of the Jazztronica trend. The album is Shipp's fourth for Thirsty Ear Records' Blue Series, a new jazz line which Shipp curates. Terry spoke with them recently. They started off with some music from Equilibrium, Vamp to Vibe.
Music from Matthew Shipp's new CD, Equilibrium. Now, something that you've been doing with your work lately is bringing together jazz and hip-hop in a way that I'd imagine isn't terribly commercially viable either as jazz or hip-hop.
Right.
In other words, I don't think you're doing this because you think it's where the money is. How did you start bringing the two together?
Well, I'm a jazz musician through and through. I grew up a jazz musician. That's my major thing, but I've always been very open-minded, I hope. And I've always been a big fan of many types of music. And, you know, even though I'm considered avant-gardist as far as jazz goes, there's always kind of been a strand of soul that goes throughout jazz. If you look in the 60s, you know, Ramsey Lewis, who came out of Amal Jamal into Joe Zawinul when he was playing with Cannonball Adderley, and that later goes into Herbie Hancock. And that strain in the jazz language has always been something I've been interested in and enjoyed myself. So just living now in the 21st century, I've felt that there's kind of a need for jazz to take into account the computer machine. So therefore, aspects of beat and hip-hop culture and DJ culture, to me, are part of the same modern landscape. You know, I'm trying to express a lot of the same things that I see people like, say, DJ Spooky or DJ Shadow or whatever beat artists are out there.
Did you start listening to hip-hop because you were buying records and playing them at home, or did you just, like, hear it all around you on the street, you know, in friends' houses and clubs?
Hip-hop was just in the environment. When hip-hop originally, I used to work in a record store after I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. This would be, like, around, say, you know, 79, 80. And when hip-hop was first starting to sell a little bit, I remember I thought music was barbaric. And we used to make fun of people coming in buying hip-hop records at the time. And then one day I was in a cab and I heard The Message by Grandmaster Flash, and my whole life was changed. And, you know, I became an avid hip-hop fan. And, I've just always, in the back of my mind, imagine some type of marriage between the languages of jazz and hip-hop. And it took me a long time to get the chutzpah up to actually try to explore it.
Well, you know, one of the new CDs that you've released is a collaboration between you and a hip-hop group called Anti-Pop Consortium. And with a name like Anti-Pop Consortium, they're pretty well not going to get a really big pop commercial following. Well, who is this group and how did you come together with them?
Well, I know Beans, who's one of them. This Beans and Priest are the two rappers in the group. And Beans used to work at Other Music, which is a store in downtown Manhattan, an indie music store. And I met Beans at Other Music. I used to see him at concerts, and I used to see Priest at concerts sometimes. So they were just people I knew as fans of the music. But I started talking to Beans, and then he all of a sudden, you know, I started seeing his picture in magazines, and I was like, I know this guy, you know. And, he was just happened from there.
Well, let's hear something from your collaboration with Anti-Pop Consortium. And this is a piece called Places I've Never Been. Would you talk about this before we hear it?
Basically, with the Anti-Pop album, I gathered the jazz musicians together, took them in the studio. Beans and Priest were there, but we basically did our own thing and as source material to give to them to chop up and to edit and to put, you know, put their beats on and to do whatever. And Priest actually played synthesizer on a couple cuts. This cut, I don't exactly remember what the genesis was in the studio. I just remember, you know, coming up with the riff, you know, getting the, you know, musicians kind of in sync with it. And but they did a lot of things with this in the editing process after, and it actually took on a whole different life of its, you know, than what we did with it in the studio.
Let's hear it. This is Places I've Never Been. That's Places I've Never Been from a new CD that's a collaboration between my guest, Matthew Shipp, who's a jazz pianist and composer, and the hip-hop group Anti-Pop Consortium. The Anti-Pop CD that we just heard an excerpt of is part of a series of CDs that you're curating for a rock label called Thirsty Ear. And how did you get connected with a rock label?
I originally was friends with punk rock icon Henry Rollins, who had produced a couple albums of mine on a label of his, and he, for his label, got a production and distribution deal with Thirsty Ear. So I met Peter Gordon of Thirsty Ear through Henry Rollins. And then Henry's label kind of became a catalog label and wasn't active any longer, so Thirsty Ear signed me directly. And Peter got the idea of wanting to start a jazz branch of the label, so he asked me to be the A&R person and curate it, and hence the Blue Series, which is, you know, the jazz part of the label. And we've done right now, I think, about 15 releases. And I have myself 4 releases as a leader on the label. So, you know, it's growing every day.
How do you connect with Henry Rollins and with punk music, and how does he connect with you?
In the early 90s, free jazz, which, you know, has, for a lot of people and for many different reasons, was considered dead, I guess, kind of got a resurgence from a whole punk community just discovered the music. And that lasted for about 3 or 4 or 5 years, and it, you know, kind of petered out. But the thrust that happened because of that, you know, still continues, and many young people discovered the music through that and actually, you know, became connoisseurs of jazz in general. I run into kids that discover jazz through Henry Rollins and, you know, tell me about their Billie Holiday albums and Duke Ellington albums that they're buying, and they, you know, gave themselves an education in the music in a very quick time. So that's how, you know, I originally met Henry through a friend who was a jazz writer who had done an article about Henry, and Henry was talking about Duke Ellington and Sonny Rollins in the article. So I mentioned to my friend, I didn't know that guy, you know, who was in Black Flag was a jazz fan, and he said, oh yeah, you should send him some of your stuff, I think he liked what you're doing, which I did, and Henry wrote me back right away, and, you know, we developed a relationship together.
Jazz pianist Matthew Shipp, from his album New Bop, this is Dee's Choice.
much of a crossover have you found there is between like rock audiences, but the rock audience is more on the like avant-garde edge of rock, and avant-garde jazz audiences?
There is a big crossover. I'm kind of always interested to see how a younger generation discovers a music that already exists. And you know, there are jazz heads that, you know, have Coltrane albums, whatever, have followed the music, and their entrance into the music was originally jazz. But a whole new generation of people, you know, discover the music however they discover it. And there's a huge follow-over between, like, people like, say, Sonic Youth and their audience, and people that get into the more experimental aspects of jazz. I just discovered that being on the road. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a huge part of where my audience comes from, even though I do have a pretty heavy jazz component of my audience, you know, people that are basically jazz people.
Well, how did you start listening to jazz? You know, you've said that young people will likely look for some kind of new high-energy music. But is that what got you listening when you were young?
No. what got me listening to jazz was seeing Amy Jamal play on TV. It was on, I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, so Channel 12 in Wilmington.
The public television station.
Right, their public television. I saw Amy Jamal playing the blues, and it was something so beautiful and spiritual about it. I just decided right then I wanted to be a jazz musician. I had, you know, been a classical pianist, been playing classical music and taking the regular classical lessons that kids take. And it also helped that my parents had a good jazz collection. My mother was friends with Clifford Brown. Mm. You know, I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, Clifford's hometown. And my mother had a fascination with the iconoclastic weirdness of Monk that she thought was very charming. So, and my parents had actually met Monk through a friend of the family. So I used to hear stories about Monk a lot around the house and about Clifford. And my father was also, he's a retired police captain. And there was a great vibes player in Wilmington, Delaware, Lem Winchester, who had played with Ramsey Lewis. And Lem Winchester was also a police officer, and my father had been partners with Lem for a while. Lem, unfortunately, was playing Russian roulette one night and shot himself. Mm-hmm. But I was in my family environment. There were jazz records around the house, even though my parents like didn't put them on a lot, but they were around. And there was a kind of a mythology in the house because of my mother knowing Clifford, them having met Monk and stuff. And then having seen Amar Jamal on TV, it really crystallized in my head that I wanted to be a jazz musician.
Were your friends listening to jazz, or were they listening to everything?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I have often joked in articles that I kind of lived a schizophrenic life, you know, and I would go home and listen to Coltrane with headphones. And then, you know, when I went to school, I mean, you know, all I talked about was, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin. Because, if you're in high school, I mean, there were no girls that I could impress by the fact that I went home and listened to John Coltrane. If I had a ticket to a Led Zeppelin concert, I could possibly impress a girl, but not by telling them I listened to John Coltrane.
One of the things that a lot of musicians have really not liked about hip-hop music is that in some ways hip-hop eliminated the musician because they relied so much on sampling and on beats, you know, programmed beats, synthesized beats. Do you feel like you're helping to bring instrumentation back into a form of hip-hop?
Yes, I do. I know I've talked to a lot of programmers and rappers and whatever, and they often have, you know, especially after, you know, they see how the sessions go and stuff, they often say, like, wow, this live music thing is a component that we really need to, you know, have more happen more often. I mean, I think the whole thing of live music, and I'm actually really fascinated with programming and the computer aspect and the aspect of the machine, because the challenge to me as a jazz musician is to take the machine and make it become alive and to give the machine soul. That's a challenge that I'm finding being involved with these projects, and so it's a good marriage.
The rhythm of jazz is often a kind of behind the beat rhythm. The rhythm of hip hop is not behind the beat. It's really right on top of the beat. Did you have to go through any kind of rhythmic shifts collaborating with hip-hop musicians?
Not really. I think I relied more on, if I would look for the genesis of the rhythmic sensibility that would allow me to interact with the machine and beat programming as a jazz musician, it would probably be what I learned from my involvement with Herbie Hancock's music as a teenager. Now, I mean, I play completely different and I bring the sensibilities that I have as a free jazz musician to the beats. But I would say that there's a precedent for a, quote, pure jazz musician interacting with programming, basically through what Herbie did, you know, allowed us to know that that could be done. Whenever I play with any drummer in a jazz setting, you know, I listen to what he does, his vocabulary. And, you know, even if it's jazz, you know, every drummer is different. So they do different things with the cymbals. They accent things differently. And as an improviser, you pride yourself on being able to react to the environment. Enough said.
Okay. Matthew Shipp, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Matthew Shipp has two new albums on the Thirsty Ears label, Equilibrium and Anti-Pop versus Matthew Shipp.
Rip your arms off to bang on the drums. Razor blade rain never rust from a neck.